Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast. I am your host, Alex Navarro, and while this ain't no game, this is most certainly a podcast about movies that are based on video games, at least this month, for the month of April. Last week, we tackled the mother of all video game live-action adaptations in Super Mario Brothers, the movie. And now we have moved into 1994's adaptation of Street Fighter II. They've helpfully removed the two, just made it Street Fighter, even though it's all the characters from Street Fighter II. Vinny Caravella.
Yes, sir. I want to jump in here quick because maybe people don't know this, but I didn't mention this last week. This Ain't No Game was the tagline on the Super Mario Brothers movie. That's where that is
from. That is where that came from.
That is, I know that
Ryan did not invent that phrase wholesale.
No. He used it because that is a dumbass thing to put on your dumbass video game movie,
especially about Super Mario Brothers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tang is also just a great abbreviation.
Tang
sounds
awesome. It's fantastic. Alex Navarro, Street Fighter the movie, Street Fighter 2.
You're a Street Fighter fan, right, Vinny?
I am a Street Fighter fan. I'm not a competitive Street Fighter, but it will always hold a very, very Street Fighter 2 especially will always hold a very special place in my heart. I was of the right age to be in the arcades for that game. I was of the right age to get that game on a Super Nintendo. I was at the right place to have that cabinet be in at least three places around my neighborhood where I could play it. The video rental store, I think it was Street Fighter 1, was in the stationery store near my house. I think that got replaced with either
in the stationery store.
Yeah, you know, like the place where they sell smokes and cards. It was like in the back room where the shipping, it was in the back room where they'd store the extra boxes of things, and they had a Russian Attack cabinet and a Street Fighter cabinet. I'm pretty sure they had a Street Fighter 2 cabinet there. And then at the mall. They obviously had it at the mall.
Right.
I played a bunch of Street Fighter 2 in the arcades. Thought I was okay until anybody else dropped a quarter into it. And then we'd usually get cleaned out. And you could usually, in the arcades, depending on where the vendor set the difficulty, could make it up until about Vega. You know, if they set it high enough,
maybe Sagat on a good day.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then not to use this whole thing to talk about playing Street Fighter 2, but on the SNES, which I just booted up recently to show my kids, made it in the first week a challenge to get clear that game with the no losses. I think it was you can't lose any matches on the highest difficulty. And then when you hit the end screen, it's got everybody jumping, much like this movie has at the end.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's got the special Chun-Li bark or whatever, which goes, I forget what she says. It's something in Chinese, I assume. Yuck, die! You know, she jumps up in the air. And
oh, the thing she yells when she fucking flying kicks Bison in this movie, which we are talking about.
Yes. Anyway, Street Fighter 2, I love it. I'm not very good competitively at it, but I'm a big fan.
You must have loved this movie then when you first saw it.
Listen, this movie sucks, but I love this movie sucks.
No mincing words.
No, I think I love hate this movie because it's a terrible movie, but it really goes out of its way to do such fan service for like really goes out of its way to tie into the game as much as it can in the most destructive ways possible for this game, but also veers completely off the road at points.
Yeah, I will say it definitely has a fair amount of fan service in it, though there are some places where it very specifically eludes fan service in a way that I feel like actually does not benefit the picture. We'll talk more about that in a second, but first, Bradley Shoemaker.
Hi.
Another Street Fighter fan, I know, deep in your heart. How much Street Fighter were you playing back in the day when this movie came out?
A lot. What year did this come out?
94. So 94. And Street Fighter 2 is 92?
94. I probably had become fully MK2 pilled by that time.
Yeah, that's fair.
That was the arcade fighter with which I chose to cast my lot and spend all my lunch money getting really good at it. It was the only fighting game I ever got good enough where a couple times I was like, is this person that I'm destroying going to beat me up in real life?
Fair.
This just got really tense as I am winning this match.
The dilemma of the nerd.
But Street Fighter, it was a little more, I mean, I played it. I certainly enjoyed it quite a bit. Played more on the SNES than the arcade, I guess.
Yeah, I was in a similar boat. I think I own two different Super Nintendo versions of that game. It was like the original release, and then eventually when Hyper Fighting came around, God, I had that one too.
They double dipped on that one.
They super got me on that
here,
one.
Here you go, a slightly better version of this game for full price again.
I did not buy that again.
No, I was an idiot. I did it, but I mean, Hyper Fighting is also just like loads better. So,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
I justified it in my brain that way.
It was undeniable at the time.
Also, dumb fact that freaking SNES cart was like $70 or something at the time.
It was like $70 or $80, I believe.
Definitely getting into the era where prices of games were scaling with how much space they took on the cart.
Hell of a game.
But before that, so there was a Street Fighter 1 machine in our local roller rink for a while, and I definitely played a little bit of that before Street Fighter 2 came around, though I don't remember much about it other than it having the four characters and me thinking it was not very good. I don't remember exactly where I was in the world where I discovered Street Fighter 2, but I think it was at a water park in Williamsburg, Virginia, Water Country, USA, in their giant arcade they had there. I think that was the first time I ever played Street Fighter 2. But then it showed up at my local 7-Eleven. It was at the arcade that was across the street from my elementary school when I was in fourth grade. I played it everywhere that I could and sank a great deal of money into it despite never being particularly talented at it. I got okay at E-Honda, and that's about it. And I did not see this movie in theaters when it came out because I had been... I think I had just enough sense in my head to say... Video game adaptations ain't there yet. I don't think I need to run out and see this in the theater. I did see it a couple of years, I think, after the fact when it was on home video, and I remember just being gobsmacked by how fucking chintzy everything in this movie felt at the time.
I don't want to just establish a cliche here week by week as we go through these movies, but how did this get made?
There are some answers to that question here in a moment, but Brad, so this was your first time seeing Street Fighter, the movie?
Yes, the most direct exposure I have had to this movie previously was the Street Fighter, the movie, the game, launch game for the PlayStation.
Which featured, similar to Mortal Kombat, digitized versions of the actors playing the characters in a video game that felt more like a bad knockoff of Pit Fighter than anything close to Street Fighter.
Man, I wonder if they just shot them on set for that game.
I think they did at least some of the actors on set, yes.
That would have been smart.
As opposed to getting them back in costume again later.
I listened to the commentary track, which is on the Blu-ray of this movie, which was recorded for the Laserdisc edition that came out the year following. And in it, Steven E. Souza, the director, talks a little bit about the video game that they made based on the movie. And he just straight up calls that Street Fighter 3, which I think is adorable.
Wow. That is possibly, that's maybe the most audacious thing I have ever heard anyone say about their work ever.
But that's the thing, is I think someone may have just told him we're making a Street Fighter game based on the movie, and no one told him it wasn't Street Fighter 3.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I mean, listen, Street Fighter Third Strike is, like, not that great, but even still...
It's light years better than that game was.
It's still really... I mean, Street Fighter the movie, the game, is a weird, like... Not invited to Thanksgiving dinner ever at the Street Fighter parties.
No, that's the one they keep locked in the basement.
It's off doing a tour of Europe somewhere.
They slide slivers of meat under the door, so they never let it out. Well, okay, so you asked the question, Brad, the million-dollar question, how did this get made? And the answer is, it is entirely Capcom's fault.
Wow.
This movie was almost exclusively financed by Capcom. It was their idea to do a movie based on the franchise. They really wanted to make this happen. And so the reason Steven E. D'Souza, who, by the way, is the writer of such hit films as Die Hard, The Running Man, and Commando.
Huh.
Yes.
Listen, not exactly a lightweight.
Well, there's also a post of that career as well that went on to do some other things.
Like?
What was he... Didn't he do like Operation Dumbo Drop or something?
I believe something along those lines. Yes, I'm going to say his directorial career is maybe not as storied as his screenwriting career. But
fair enough.
But I'm an admirer of D'Souza's writing. He's a great action script writer.
I'm sorry. I got to interrupt you because it's my favorite movie. And if I were to ask you, what does Vinny bring up that nobody ever recognizes as a movie, but always says he saw? Hudson Hawk. He
yes.
wrote. Which we will someday watch Hudson Hawk. And listen, thank you.
Yes, when we do our Return of Bruno month, we will we'll make sure that Hudson Hawk gets thrown in there at some point.
That's what it was. Yes.
But so D'Souza had been wanting to do some directing. He had gotten some offers to do directing prior to this, but had not taken up very many of them. And so someone got a hold of him and said, "Hey, we have this movie pitch to do a Street Fighter movie, and we have these Capcom executives that are going to be in town in LA tomorrow. Can you write a screenplay? Can you write a pitch script?"
Wow.
So he wrote the skeleton of what this movie ended up being in less than 24 hours.
Did somebody give him like a character? Did he just look at the character select screen for Street Fighter?
He knew what Street Fighter was because his son was a big Street Fighter player. Boy. And so, my kid likes video games, whatever. He would go to the arcade with his son and play the game with him. So he knew the characters. Boy. He understood what Street Fighter 2 was going into this, which I think is why he got the pitch initially.
Okay.
So he agreed to do it. They liked the script idea enough to go forward with it. But Capcom had almost entire creative control and veto power for everything because they were financing the vast majority of the film.
So it is their fault.
It really is.
They have the ability to stop all of this.
They could have, and they chose not to. And also, they were the ones that mandated that the film come out in December 1994, which led to a very intense filming and post-production schedule that they kind of burned through pretty fast. So the casting, I think the casting is probably the most interesting part of this movie. For good and bad reasons. The most notable thing, I mean, obviously Van Damme is Guile, Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels.
Uh-huh.
That was Capcom's idea. They envisioned Guile as Jean-Claude Van Damme from the moment they started talking about doing a Street Fighter movie.
You know, everybody's favorite American serviceman.
All-American military dude.
I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger played a guy named John Matrix, God's sakes.
But look at the imagery in the game, though. It's, you know, the Stars and Stripes tattoo, the American military base, the whole thing.
Yep. I am not saying an American serviceman cannot and should not have a deep accent. But yes, from the game, that guy looks like he eats hamburgers and pumps a shotgun in his like rocking chair back home.
Like he's using the hamburger grease to like comb his hair with.
Of course, he's not even part of the American military in this. They wrote him as a UN stand-in, international peacekeeper type.
Yeah, their goal there was to sort of create like a, since these are the world warriors, you know, let's have an international fighting force here, and the UN kind of made the most sense. But hilariously, and this is some real good Japanese companies not understanding the, let's just say, somewhat slapdash way American companies do business, they insisted that the filmmakers write to the UN and ask for permission to use the name UN in the film before they went forward, instead of just doing it, which Hollywood screenwriters don't give a fuck about asking for permission about that kind of stuff. And the UN very firmly turned them down, which is why they had to change everything to the AN, the Allied Nations. Raul Julia agreed to play Bison for the same reason, you know, D'Souza did. His kids love Street Fighter, and he was like, okay, sure, I'll do this. As most people know, this is Raul Julia's last film. He was suffering from stomach cancer going into filming this. Somehow managed to do most of his own physical acting. There are a couple of stunts that are definitely not him, but by and large, a lot of that is Raul Julia still doing physical acting and performing in the fight scenes, despite the fact that he was, like, his health was deteriorating pretty significantly. And him and Van Damme were the bulk of the casting budget. Like, Van Damme alone commanded $8 million. This movie had a $35 million total budget.
Holy God, that explains a lot about why except for Ming-Na Wen, almost every other actor in this, I'd struggled to remember who they were or, you know.
There's a couple in there, which we'll
Wes
Studi.
I could not call his name to mind, but I definitely knew I had seen him.
Where is Van Damme at this point in his career? Like, what is this? Like
he's firmly in action star mode here.
Okay, this is like big Van Damme moment.
Yeah, like you know, Bloodsport was late 80s. From here, he's done Hard Target. He's done Double Impact.
Universal Soldier has already happened.
The first Universal Soldier has happened.
So he's pretty hot. He's like the next Arnold Schwarzenegger at this point.
He would like to think he is.
Yeah, right.
I'd say like he's a half tier below the Schwarzenegger and Stallone. Like he still makes a lot of money at the box office, but he is not like you are going to make $100 million no matter what level action star.
But at this point, he could. That trajectory could take him there. Like, it's not, it's ascendant. It's not on the...
If some other career choices had been made, it's possible he would be up there still to this day.
Is Street Fighter one of those choices?
I mean, he made money off it, if nothing else. And here's the thing. This movie made money. It almost made $100 million at the box office, so it more than made its money back. Let's talk about the rest of this cast here. So one of the things D'Souza complains a little bit about is the fact he had to write a movie for basically 16 characters, which is a lot of characters for a 100-minute movie.
Fair complaint.
Almost every Street Fighter character is represented here, at least the Street Fighter II era, though Fei Long is excised. But so they replace him with Captain Sawada, who is a character that only appears in the movie video game outside of this movie, is never really heard from again in a meaningful way. And the only reason this character exists is because Capcom had some kind of contract with this Japanese actor, Kenya Sawada, who did not really speak English and is reading most of his lines phonetically. There's a reason why he's in the movie and also why maybe he does not have a lot of speaking scenes.
A single boat against everything he's got? The pilot would have to be out of his mind.
I mentioned Byron Mann as Ryu. He had not done a great many movies prior to this, but he went on to star in a few kind of lower level action films like the Crying Freeman adaptation, which is an anime, and also the 2004 Catwoman movie.
Okay.
The Halle Berry one.
Okay.
Which is, she accepted the Razzie Award for.
Listen, she gets licked by cats and becomes Catwoman.
It's true. No, that's you're thinking of Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Michelle Pfeiffer.
The Halle Berry one is a lot stupider, if I remember correctly.
Right, yes. Even stupider, you're right.
Damian Chapa is Ken. The only things I really know him from other than this are he was in Under Siege, the Steven Seagal movie, and he was also in the Benjamin Bratt Barrio drama Blood In, Blood Out.
Ooh.
Which is like a 3-hour like immigrant crime story epic that I somehow saw at the age of like 11 and has weirdly emblazoned in my brain for some reason.
Okay.
Ming-Na Wen, we mentioned, is Chun-Li. Her biggest film up to this point was The Joy Luck Club, which was like her second film. Hmm. And obviously she's gone on to have a pretty significant career. She had multiple runs on the show ER, many films after this.
She's good in this.
Yeah, she was... I remember she was getting pretty big around this time.
I'm going to say, though, none where she had to make the faces that she has to make in this movie, which are something else. I'm just going down the list here.
Yeah.
Peter Tuisasopo is E. Honda. I don't know him from much else acting, but his family is of note because the Tuisasopos have produced at least 4 or 5 different NFL players over the years, including Peter himself. Who was at least drafted to the NFL at some point. But Marcus Tuisasopo, who was in that family, was a starting quarterback for the Oakland Raiders for a number of years.
I also thought he was good in this movie.
He's having the most fun, I feel like, of anybody in this movie. Wes Studi, who I may be having fun. It's hard to tell with him. He plays a lot of stoic characters over the years. Wes Studi is a fantastic character actor of Cherokee descent. You may know him from The Last of Mohicans, Heat, and my personal favorite, Deep Rising. We have Kylie Minogue as Cammy. She's a pop star. You know her now. At the time, she was mostly known in the UK and Australia, though I think she'd had 1 or 2 hits that kind of made their way to the US. And then she went on to record Can't Get You Out of My Head, which is straight up one of the best pop songs ever written.
When was that? That was...
Early aughts.
Oh, God, was it that late?
Yeah, it was like 2002, 2003, I think.
Wild. In my head, it was pretty close to this movie, I guess not.
No, it was some years after this.
Also, I don't even know when is the time to bring this up. Why has this been going around on Twitter again recently about Van Damme talking about having an affair with her on the set of this movie?
That makes the round every couple of years or so.
I literally, last week, saw somebody tweeting screenshots of that interview. I don't know why.
You know, whenever new video game movies bubble up, a lot of the same trivia around video game movies tends to bubble up again. So,
sure.
But yes, him sure. And I do believe him, and at least according to Van Damme, him and Kylie Minogue had some kind of affair while filming this film.
Van Damme seems weird.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. I wouldn't say he seems like a terrible guy, but he's definitely weird. Miguel Nunez plays DJ. He is a comedic actor. You have probably seen him stuff. Vinny, you might know him from Return of the Living Dead, that movie we did the film in 40s for.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't recognize him, but yeah.
He was also in Lethal Weapon 3, and of course, the gender-bending basketball comedy, Juana Man.
Okay. I don't think I've seen that one.
No one has.
Okay.
It's one of those movies that's a punchline, not a movie people have actually seen.
Okay.
Andrew Brynarski plays Zangief. He's just one of those big tough guy character actors that's in a million things. He's been in a bunch of like football movies and prison movies and other things over the years. I'd say he also seems like he's having fun in the role, if nothing else, though this version of Zangief is kind of a bummer.
Yes, I agree strongly. Yes.
They made him too stupid. He's not supposed to be that stupid.
Yes.
Yeah. But before it's revealed how dumb he is, I was all ready to come in here and just be like, fucking Zangief would never do this. He would never.
No.
Zangief would never work for the bad guy.
Yes.
And then they, in fact, it just turns out he's too dumb to know who the bad guy is.
It's just
in this
not,
movie.
It's just not great.
Yeah.
All right, we got a few more here. I'm just going to run them down here. Roshan Seth is Dalsim, or this movie's a version, again, another version of a character that I feel like maybe does not fare well here. But he is a fairly well-regarded Indian actor. He's been in a number of Hollywood films as well, including Gandhi, The Temple of Doom, and Mississippi Masala. We have Robert Mamone as Blanca. This is maybe the worst of all of the portrayals of this character. Uh-huh.
Sorry, Charlie slash Blanca. He's playing two roles here, okay?
Yeah, well, Charlie had not debuted in the video games yet at this point.
It's like it's weird that they mashed up two different characters from the game.
Mm.
But Charlie, again, doesn't make an appearance until much later, does he?
I think he's in the story. He's in Guile's end.
Like, Guile mentions Charlie, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't until Alpha that he became a playable character.
Mamone is an Australian actor. He was mostly a TV actor, though he also had a minor role in the Matrix sequels as AK, who I guess is one of the operators on one of the other ships, but I don't really remember him super well.
Oh, man, I feel like that's very familiar to me, but I'm trying to think of... You don't get too much screen time for old Blanca without all the makeup on, so
no.
I'm trying to place the face.
Jay Tavara is Vega. He's another Native American actor, and he went on to star in some films like Executive Decision, another Steven Seagal film. Weirdly enough, the Spike Jones Nicolas Cage movie adaptation, and then also a direct-to-video animated film based on the Turok franchise, which I did not know existed.
Can I just say I fucking love this dude in this role?
Like,
I think Vega is the actual most successfully executed character in terms of like being reminiscent of the game.
Yes.
Like the way specifically that like kind of pit fighting scene at the beginning where he's about to go up against Ryu, and like, I mean, first of all, his like physique is incredible and that tattoo looks right out of the game, but it's like, it's kind of like a combination of the hair and like the shit eating grin on his face when he takes the mask off. It's like, okay, he's like perfectly capturing the like beautiful arrogance of Vega, you know, like exactly what you think that character is from the game. He's like nailing it.
He's also one of the few characters. I mean, he doesn't really get any lines, which, you know, whatever. Vega is not a character I think of as like verbose, but like, he's one of the only characters who is wearing his big, dumb Street Fighter costume and doesn't look like it's wearing him.
Yes,
like,
totally.
He carries it.
He really sells everything about that role in a movie full of characters that are not selling it.
One of the actors who's definitely not selling it super well is Greg Rainwater as T-Hawk, who I did not even realize was T-Hawk until they slapped the headband on him and are like, oh, that's T-Hawk.
Yeah.
He's another Native actor.
He calls him T-Hawk a couple of times.
I did a double take when he called him T-Hawk the first time.
That actor did not do a whole lot past this movie. So, and then last but not least, I leave him for last because I just want to mention my favorite trivia fact about him. Grand L. Bush as Balrog, the first human in the world to personify Balrog. I say it that way, which is not a way any normal person would talk, because Grand L. Bush is the narrator and subject of one of my favorite weird YouTube videos anywhere in the world. It is a 5-minute video which appears to have audio re-recorded taken from a speech he did at some kind of charity fan convention where he talked about becoming Balrog for whatever reason, which was then re-recorded and edited by his wife, who is a TV journalist in Los Angeles. And it was done using a freeware version of editing software, because you can see the logos for the software like peppered throughout the video as you go through these slideshow of behind the scenes photos he took while he was filming Street Fighter. And he talks in the most grandiose way. I'm going to play a clip from this. It is my favorite thing on the internet.
My transformation into Balrog the Ferocious started straightway. My physical development fell under the watchful eye of former kickboxing champ Benny the Jet Yurkidis. Before leaving the States, I worked out at his gym in North Hollywood for a whole month. We spent 4 more weeks running up and down the streets of Bangkok, fighting through stifling heat, walls of pollution. We jogged and sprinted for more than 3 kilometers each day, energized by bodybuilding shakes, a healthy diet, and a desire to reach one goal, to create a lean, mean fighting machine. Yes, it was in exotic Bangkok where I lost more than a stone, or 15 pounds in body weight within 30 days. And by the time we left for Australia, for 2 more months of filming, I had indeed become Balrog, personified.
I think we must have done it on one of the Friday Alex's videos, because I remember it like burned in my head as the like when I became Balrog, like Balrog
game never over. I'll say it again. Grand L. Bush seems like an incredibly sweet man, like a lovely dude, but that video is just so weird in a completely innocent and like not problematic way. It's just bizarre.
Okay. There's a sincerity to it that is like completely at odds with this entire movie and character.
Yes. Because also this version of Balrog, and similar to E. Honda, they have been first of all, Balrog's a good guy in this. He's not one of Bison's henchmen. Him and E. Honda are both guys who had their sporting careers derailed by M. Bison and were roped into this revenge plot by Chun-Li, who is pretending to be, or either is or is pretending to be a journalist. I think she is, but that's also a cover story.
Yeah, she's like layers of undercover here.
Yeah.
They make some weird choices in this about who to align with whom.
Yes.
You know?
Like, DJ's a bad guy here, even though he's not in the game.
Specifically, the main one, the first one I was going to say is, having DJ be the main henchman of Bison is just like, what? Balrog aligned with the...
Chun-Li and the...
Right, like...
Ryu and Ken are kind of
Drifter sort of
gun merchants, but like,
but like a little bit of a Robin Hood bent thing, because they kind of mention it's like, oh, you steal from thieves kind of thing.
Yeah. Just some of Zangief as well, like I said, being just another henchman. Like, some, I get they have to write a movie, make it make some sense, but
Dalteam, like
as a genetic scientist
who gets taken in by Bison against his will. It's very odd, yes, but I understand you're writing a movie. This is where my love hate for this movie comes in, where they are so strict in some things they feel like they have to get the movie into the movie from Street Fighter 2, and then so far afield in a game of telephone way about Street Fighter. That's like, okay, sure.
Like, there are things, like, we'll get into the plot here in a second, but, like, there are things they do in this movie in the production aspect of things where I feel like there is some love and some attention and some, like, willingness to do some things that I think would benefit it as an action movie. Their fight trainer is Benny Urquidez, who is a famous stuntman and martial artist who is super well-known in Hong Kong, but has also, like, done a bunch of stuff in the U.S., He's one of Sagat's henchmen in the film. Mm. He's the guy, kind of short guy with the no eyebrows. You only see for like a second. But and I'll say it's a crime they don't let him really fight in the movie, because he's fucking... There are some fights that dude has done with Jackie Chan that are some of the greatest shit I've ever seen in my life. He got a great fight out of John Cusack in Gross Point Blank. He's the hitman who shows up at the high school reunion and tries to kill him in that movie.
It's funny you mention that, because one of my notes here is, like, it's a real shame we're watching this after all the Michelle Yeoh stuff, because I think all the fight scenes in this are kind of lame.
That's the problem, is that you have this setup here of, like, okay, you have this great fight choreographer, like, you've obviously paid attention to things like the costuming and sort of, like, how to translate that into film, and then you make this movie, which might as well just be a shitty G.I. Joe knockoff.
Yeah.
Like, this, they avoid... at all possible angles, doing actual street fights. There is
crazy.
A literal visual metaphor for what this movie does in that street fight movie scene I'd mentioned with Vega and Ryu. They are about to finally have a street fight after like almost 25 minutes of setup, and then Jean-Claude Van Damme crashes a tank through the scene.
Popular guy, the greatest cage fighter since Iron Fist.
Oh yeah, what happened to him?
He retired. And became me.
Why are you making me watch this?
Research. You fight next.
Yep, that pretty much sums it up. Like, budget aside, like, maybe some of these effects would be too expensive, but otherwise it kind of feels like a made-for-basic cable, like,
yes.
USA Network
yes.
movie, action movie, like something you'd see on Saturday afternoon on basic cable in this time.
Every punch thrown feels like a shot of from the point of view of, like, facing the person throwing the punch, and then the cut to the reverse shot of somebody flying backwards, and never a wide shot. And, like, compared that to all the Michelle Yeoh movies that we watched, and maybe this isn't fair because this is what these movies are known for, the Hong Kong stuff, but, like, those scenes were all wide shots of people getting punched and, you know, reacting and having to do a lot of work. And these all feel like somebody's punching towards a camera and then somebody yells cut, and then somebody's on the reverse being like, now jump backwards. It's really...
We talked a lot about the continuity of those fight scenes and also just the impact of everything. And some of that is the stunt performers themselves, like, working snug and, like, you know, taking hits they wouldn't necessarily take in a Hollywood film. But, like, everything here feels fucking weightless. Like,
totally.
Even when people are crashing through things, when, like, you know, when stuff is supposed to really look like it's hitting hard, it never really does. There are a couple of actors that I feel like handle it better than others, but... And one thing that I guess, like, D'Souza mentions on the commentary is that a lot of the training for these scenes was happening literally hours before they went and filmed it.
Okay.
So, like, there wasn't a ton of time for, like, setting up massive choreography for these fights. And because a lot of the fight scenes were shot in chronological order, you can actually, at least according to him, you can see these actors getting better at the fights as the movie moves along. Specifically, he mentions the Ryu and Ken actors as, like, getting a lot better at the fight choreography as they get toward the end of the film. And I'll agree, I think that fight at the end with them in the locker room is better than any of the other stuff they do. But most of these fights just feel impactless.
Yeah. Yes. And just kind of actually made in the editing room. Like,
yeah,
they're just, the cuts are so, like, I don't know.
Yeah, and not to jump ahead to next week, although I'm very excited for next week, but between this and the Mortal Kombat movie, like, only one of those movies knowing that they should make their movie based on a fighting game about a fighting tournament.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, I mean,
the template is right there. Just stage a bunch of good fight scenes between characters from this game.
I mean, the one thing I will say is that Mortal Kombat leans more into its blood sport kumite aspect a lot more than Street Fighter does, especially as it goes along. Like, the tournament feels very incidental in the story of Street Fighter, but at the same time, the degree to which this movie goes out of its way to avoid ever being a fighting tournament is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't mean the tournament as plot device so much in Mortal Kombat, and more at the meta level of just, like, these are the showpiece moments of this movie, are two video game characters, you know, fighting fighting it out, squaring it all, squaring off. Like, yeah, there's just not enough of that in here.
There's a ton
of gunplay.
It's
like embarrassed to be a martial arts movie,
right,
it feels like.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, they're most of the people are, they're more shootouts and explosions than kind of good fights.
I think there are literally more shots of Street Fighter characters, you know, cocking guns than there are them actually fighting.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's my relationship with this movie is kind of love hate. Like, again, they try to do weird things, kind of like the Mario Brothers movie, and this is kind of a neat transition we're going through of like. Mm-hmm. Mario Brothers almost completely.
D'Souza mentions the Mario Brothers movie on the commentary like 4 or 5 times.
Oh,
as
really?
Like the everyone was afraid to make video game movies after that because that movie bombed so hard. And he's just like, and he's just musing. It's like, you know, I think at some point down the road, people will stop mentioning the fact that these adaptations are of video games. You know, they'll just be treated like any other source material, like a novel or anything else.
He's not wrong. I think that's true.
Not this movie, though.
No. I will say this about the movie. Given everything, and this is kind of like, faint praise, but there is a version of this. Street Fighter is a kind of, I'm going to say, it's a landmine to step on to make a movie, even as a game. It is a caricature of a lot of different nationalities, and,
yes.
You know, and I feel like they...
You are operating on some fairly fundamental stereotypes here to kind of get your characters going.
And they don't lean in. I feel like they don't lean into that stuff.
No.
And they don't play it for laughs. And they don't play it for
at
goofs.
Least until the end credits, yes.
Hey, how do you know in this man's, in this person's international army, if you're in a good unit? Well, it's simple. The CO is English, the cook is French, the mechanic is German, the paymaster is Swiss, and the cute nurse in the infirmary is Swedish. And how do you know if you're in a bad unit? Well, the CO is German, the cook is English, the mechanic is Italian, the paymaster is French, and the cute nurse in the infirmary is a Bulgarian named Boris.
I had that thought. Yes. I had that thought watching this that it doesn't go far enough in either direction. Like, it's not cartoonish enough to fully become like a comic book movie caricature sort of thing. But it's also not going. It's like trying to be realistic, but it doesn't go far enough into gritty realism to kind of reinvent itself as that either. I kind of had the thought watching this. I almost wish I had thought of this when we were picking movies for this month. Did you guys watch the Street Fighter II anime film?
I've seen
this time.
I've seen. I don't remember.
Is that the
much.
One that ends with Korn's blind over the credits?
Probably.
Yes.
That is the movie. I mean, obviously, all of that was added for the American release because a lot of weird shit was getting done to what little anime was making it over on VHS at that time. That's the movie that made me aware of KMFDM, I will say.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that movie having a weirdly hype soundtrack for a
yes.
American dub of an anime.
Anyway, I should just go watch that on my own time. I haven't seen it since the 90s, but I remember thinking it was kind of awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the reason it's awesome is that the art just looks like what you imagine those characters being, and they're kind of their outsized personas.
That was a big part of it, for sure.
And I think some of the casting here gets at that. I mean, look, if you're not going to cast a 6'10" guy who can do knee strikes as Sagat, Wes Studi is an actor that at least, like, exudes that kind of menace. Mm. Like, if you're not going to get, like, a giant boxer dude, Grandel Bush seems like he's having a grand old time playing this character. But there just isn't really that big, bold cartoonishness, except for Raul Julia's Bison, which is all the way that. And I do actually kind of love him in this movie.
Colonel Guile, greeting.
He took the bait. Press that signal. Stop.
Why do you address a fellow warrior with such disrespect?
Warrior? You? How many doctors and nurses have you killed this week? How many children have you orphaned?
You will choke on those words, Guile.
Anytime, dickhead. We'll go worldwide, just like now.
General, they're tracing this.
You think you're so clever, Guile? Think about this. You have 3 days.
If my $20 billion are not delivered by then, the hostages will die,
and the world will hold you responsible. Victory!
Yeah, he's fucking going for it. Like, just
he's amazing.
Not holding back. Like, does not seem for a moment. If he's embarrassed to be in this movie, he does not let on for a second.
I don't think Raul Julia ever really felt embarrassment about working. I think he just liked being an actor and working. That's the flavor I always got from him, or the vibe I always got.
He is completely miscast as M. Bison, but whatever he is doing there is amazing. Like it is, he is not intimidating kind of ever in this movie.
But he is grandiose in a way that a dictator should be.
I think he sells the megalomania for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's like living in a parallel world to everyone else in this movie about what it's like he was teleported from some other dimension where dictators are able to just get away with things and do stuff, and he's kind of like just surprised constantly, like the $20 billion and the people he keeps in his little pit and the whole thing. But he's great at it. It's just never very threatening.
But that's the thing, is that dictators sometimes did get away with shit, you know, for weird periods of time. Like, you know, Gaddafi was out there fucking doing his shit for many years, like fucking Saddam Hussein. He's apparently, Raul Julia very specifically studied Mussolini for this one, which I think kind of plays into the character. But, you know, Bison's Shadaloo is a rogue state, essentially. They have taken hostages. They are demanding, you know, a $20 billion ransom. He's making super soldiers. He's kidnapping AN troops. My initials. I should remember that.
He's got his super base.
And then Guile shows up in his fucking Belgian American accent, flexing his muscle and saying, "I'm coming for you, Bison."
And with only the most half-assed attempt to dye his hair blonde.
It is neither
tall.
High enough nor blonde enough.
Yeah, yes. not nearly enough of a flat top there or whatever.
But this intro gets you through most of the principal cast pretty quick here. You get all the AN people, which is T-Hawk and Cammy and Guile. You have the news crew / undercover people, which is Honda, Balrog, and Chun-Li, who are on site reporting on what's happening, but also clearly there with their own agenda. And then you have the Shadaloo gang, which is Bison and Zangief and DJ. And then eventually we get to this somewhat related arms deal between Sagat and Vega, and also Ryu and Ken, who are there selling guns or doing something. It's never completely clear exactly what crime they're supposed to be committing. All we know is that arms are trading hands.
I think they're supposed to be like arms dealers for like bringing guns to Sagat.
But not bad guy arm dealers? Like, what is their deal?
Yeah, there's like reference to their martial arts master at one point, as if like, you know, they still like remember their training. But yes. They're also running guns at the same time.
Like, are they there to get Bison?
No, I think they're... Ken has a real, like, we're here to make some money, but Ryu or Ryu in this movie half the time. I feel like he's Ryu.
That must have made
Ryu.
You mad, Brad.
Oh, man,
I feel like he's, you know, he's got his heart is not in it, and he's, you know, he's betraying the trust of their master. But Ken until the very end is like, I'm here to make some money, I'm here to do some stuff. But then I think
Guile, he has his face turn, really.
Yeah, and then Guile is like, oh, you steal from the crooks to sell to other crooks, and you're you know, just kind of like a write-off for like, you guys aren't really bad.
No, it's all kind of half-assed though. And I mean, look, the real thing is that this is just them getting the chance to try and show you these 16 principal characters that will all have to do stuff at various points in this movie. And that's a lot. That is a lot to have to jam in there. I will give them that. That is not an easy thing to juggle. And the movie does not successfully do it, unfortunately.
It's very early on where we just get Guile is just a doofus.
God, what an asshole. Just,
is this is it immediately where he takes the mic from
Yes,
from
and then
Chun-Li?
He does the
Yeah. What is he? Is he showing his bicep?
Well, he's showing his bicep, but also he's, you know, flipping off Bison. But then Bison cuts in his signal, and then it's like rogue fucking TV arguing. Like, it's a mess.
It's like two pro wrestlers that were put in charge of like nation states and armies. Like,
I mean, look, Street Fighter has its roots in pro wrestling, and certainly the way that personifies its characters. Raul Julia is definitely playing King Heel here. Raul Julia got his own costume designer for this movie. A different costume designer only did his stuff, which I think
I'll tell you what,
absolutely plays
good.
To the grandiosity of what we're talking about here.
The lines, the one-liners that Guile uses just seem like they are like somebody wrote them for a wrestling show. The Bison wannabes line.
This movie kind of made me question how much of or how good of an actor Van Damme actually is.
Here's what I will say. In this era of Van Damme, he is occasionally convincing and charismatic, but I would never say a great dramatic performer. Not really
I
what
like
he does.
Her.
But I don't think he's even up to the level of Schwarzenegger here.
No.
Oh,
in
no.
In that Schwarzenegger at least is a super convincing action badass. Like, he's
there are,
not... Yeah. Like, the larger-than-life personality, I feel like, isn't even really there.
No. There are other movies of this era where I feel like he commands the screen a lot more than he does here. Here, it feels like he's flailing a lot, and it just doesn't seem like he has a good sense of what this character is even
totally.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
Other
he
than
seems
American.
A little... Seems a little lost
yeah.
at times. Yeah, like, I like Time Cop. Like, that's, like, a
yes.
fun movie. It's a fun movie. It's a fun Van Damme.
Double Impact is a great example of him hamming it up in a dual role, and, like, neither performance is what I would call great, but it's great. You know
but
what I
there, mean? But, Brad, I'm totally with you. There are points in this movie, especially when he's in the Bison Showdown, where he feels like he's reading the line off a cue card for the
yep.
first time,
yep.
where it's like, dude, this is your one-liner, and you're blowing it.
Badly.
Yep.
But, you know, eventually we get through all the character introductions. We have our brawl in the weapons deal between Sagat's forces and Ryu and Ken. That's where they get shoved into the street fight that is happening in a back alley or, you know, back warehouse somewhere where Vega is the champion. And I'll say, the setup for this is fantastic. Vega beating that one guy's ass is great. Throwing Ryu in there and getting ready to, like, do that fight. And as soon as that tank comes crashing through that wall, I really, like, the first time I watched this movie, I wanted to fucking turn it off.
We got Vega, we get the mask, we get the claw, we get the gate, or the kind
the
of
electrified
chain-link
fence.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. The whole thing is happening. Yes, and then right.
they throw it all away.
The fucking Guile yeah. comes in to
and
ruin
you,
it again, ruins another
might,
scene.
You can argue that it never recovers.
No, it definitely does not. And before we get into what is actually going on with Shadaloo and Bison and his whole plot to take everything over, we gotta take a quick break. So we will be right back. And we're back. And M. Bison has hostages. He has Charlie, who he's going to fill full of, I'm just going to say, orange and green apple high C mm-hmm. to turn him into a monster. And also he's going to feed him History Channel footage to make him angry. Dhalsim is there as a scientist who is being kept under lock and key and is developing the super soldier program. And he seems real unhappy about it.
DJ's there and
DJ's
there
for a reason.
Dhalsim's proximity to big bags labeled mutagen really made me think, like, oh man, we're gonna get some proper Dhalsim shit by the end of this, aren't we?
Nope. He just loses his hair.
and then like he well, whatever, we'll get there.
Maybe for the sequel.
Well, so that's actually something D'Souza jokes about on the commentary. He's like, there were scenes that showed apparently Dhalsim slightly transforming a little bit more
huh.
that had to be left on the cutting room floor. And he's like, ah, you know, we were saving that one for the sequel.
Uh-huh. He and Blanca just vanished from the movie at the end. Anyway, let's keep going.
Yeah. So I'm going to say Bison's plan is fairly bad.
But why? Why do they still call me a warlord? And mad? All I want to do is to create the perfect genetic soldier. Not for power, not for evil, but for good. Carlos Blanca will be the first of many. They shall march out of my laboratory and sweep away every adversary, every creed, every nation, until the very planet is in the loving grip of the Pax Bisonica. And then peace will reign in the world, and all humanity shall bow to me in humble gratitude.
Like, so So his, it's hard to tell exactly like how notable his, the Nation of Shadaloo is. It's probably not that notable because all the stuff that is supposed to be in the Shadaloo language is actually just repurposed Esperanto.
Oh, really?
Like legitimately.
Okay.
And he's
the one language.
He's running this country, but doesn't appear to actually have any wealth or power to speak of. There's Bison Bucks, which is the currency here, but apparently it's not worth anything yet. That will come after he gets his $20 billion for his hostages and variety of other things, and then also at some point he's going to kidnap the Queen of England. I guess
to have her set the exchange rate to £5. Is that what it was? One bison.
Yeah, £5 per bison dollar.
Don't worry, we'll make good. And it seems like everybody kind of laughs at him. Like, I mean, Sagat definitely is like, this is worthless. What are you talking about?
Like, what? I don't really understand why anyone in this movie thinks he's a big deal, apart from the fact that he has these hostages. Like, he obviously has, like, a, you know, Bond villain secret base and a bunch of, you know, goobers working for him, including a guy who looks like he should be fucking, like, cooking pizzas down at the pizza place down my block. That guy with a ponytail that's guarding Dalsim, who looks more Ron Jeremy than a thug.
Yes, that guy definitely looks like he's at one of my family. He looks like part of the Caravella family for sure. Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like he's getting the best mercenaries here to work for him.
I mean, not if you're paying bison bucks.
No. And then he eventually is there to eventually finds a way to secure some weapons at some sort of gala event he's hosting where Chun-Li and Balrog and Honda show up as carnival performers for some reason, I guess to get close to him. But then also they don't really do anything other than blow up his guns, which kind of makes him mad.
I was confused at this part. I tried to watch it twice because they run into Ken and Ryu here.
Because there's a prison break that happens beforehand. They're all captured at one point by Guile's forces, and then Guile gets Ryu and Ken to work for him, and they stage a prison break where Guile pretends to be dead and shot and whatever.
To be dead for a really long time. Like
they literally brought him down to the morgue, and he's laying there for hours.
until he could do a good jump scare on Chun-Li. I mean, maybe it's worth it, but yes.
If I didn't give you an interview when I was alive, no way I'm gonna do it when I'm dead.
Of course. Those two young men who led the prison break and killed you. They're working for you, aren't they?
Are you asking as a reporter or as something else?
Sergeant, take Miss Zhang into custody.
No, wait. Wait, please. You're right. I'm not here just to cover the news. I don't want a story about Bison. I want his head. Now, it's taken me 20 years to get this far. You can't lock me up, not when I'm this close.
Take her away.
Yes, sir.
No. I knew you wouldn't understand.
I understand better than you know. This war is not about your personal vendetta. It's about mine.
That's maybe getting ahead of things a bit, but yes, he's down there, and then this is after Chun-Li realizes there's
Yes, this is after Chun-Li does some ninja shit and then breaks into the morgue for some reason.
Some real conspicuous ninja-looking costume.
She realizes, she throws her wireless mic on the truck to track it, and then realizes there's already a tracker that is pointing back to the morgue inside the AN headquarters or whatever, where she goes and tries to hack a computer, and then not dead Guile surprises her, but it's all cool. Everybody's cool.
Yeah.
And then, yes, we go to the scene where Chun-Li, Balrog, and Honda are going to send a truck full of explosives. I think it was supposed to enter the tent with Bison and explode and kill everyone. But
they couldn't pull that off for some reason.
Ryu and Ken, I think, alert Bison maybe to this. Like, oh, there's some confusion here.
Well, there's also like some people don't know what side Ryu and Ken are on.
Yeah. And they call them betrayers, and then they're like, we're not the betrayer, we're not the traitors, she is. And then they look, and it's like, that's when they tip their hand and have a broadcast of Chun-Li saying, we're going to blow everything, all your guns up. And then the truck comes in, and I don't know really what happens, because then you just fast forward to everybody. They kind of have this weird cut and like overlay of like, Chun-Li's been arrested.
This was the point that I wanted to turn the movie off, because what the fuck happened? Like, I'm like reviewing the footage again here to even try to get this straight. It literally feels like scene missing here.
I think, yes.
It literally goes from...
They get arrested? Yeah.
It literally goes from like... I don't understand the sequence of events. It cuts straight from, like, they're taunting him, Chun-Li and friends are taunting Bison over video remotely. Ken and Ryu are just sort of there. Like, the very next scene is, like, walking into Bison's HQ with all of them, like, in handcuffs. Like, when did you catch them?
They do some kind of world map thing where the video is like, Chun-Li's been arrested.
There's definitely this little kind of motion graphic sort of cable news looking whatever sort of thing. But yeah, like just it felt like such a non sequitur.
So weird, like, and bad.
Yeah.
It feels like parts of this movie did get cut that probably would have not been excised were it not for literal contractual obligations where they, like, for instance, had to have that Sawada guy say lines or had do that bit at the end where, like, fucking Honda and Zangief are doing the fake Godzilla fight on the model of what will be Bisonopolis. By the way, the Bisonopolis speech, I have to give Raul Julia a lot of credit. This is the dumbest shit in the world, and he is giving it so much more gravity and so much more credence than it at anywhere near where it deserves.
Raul Julia's performance here is fantastic because it really feels like that character believes every fucking thing he is saying. Whereas the rest of the characters look like they're going to crack up any second, Raul Julia's character is like not in on whatever joke is happening, and he is deadly serious about everything, especially the food court.
This is a dictator who believes in branding first and foremost, and he has that brand locked down. but you're right. That scene doesn't make any sense. The cut to them being arrested doesn't make any sense. But
going back and looking at that little connective thing, that little animation, like they in somewhat small print, they do kind of say, you know,
it's the smallest of smallest print.
Like I just wasn't paying close attention to that because it seems like it doesn't hold your attention because it doesn't seem like the kind of thing you need to pay attention to.
I watched it twice for the same reason. Right. Like at some point I was like, my brain snapped back and I was like, wait, how did everybody get here again?
Right,
and had to go watch that thing.
Also, they're in different clothes than they were the last time you saw them, you know? Like, it's just so confusing.
It doesn't have the connective tissue that it needs. But it does get you to the single dumbest bit of Jean-Claude Van Damme performance here, which is him, first him giving his briefing in front of this, satellite footage of Shadaloo, where we get our Captain Sawada phonetic line read, and then that eventually leads to him deciding to, let's just say, avoid orders and take his AN military against all regulation into battle, despite the fact they're saying, nah, we're not doing that. We're negotiating.
Dude, that speech is terrible.
Is this the up the river speech?
Yes.
Yes, it's fucking it's awful.
Terrible.
It's so bad.
As you were, Colonel.
What a surprise. Welcome to the Shadaloo front. You're just in time for the kickoff.
I'm afraid not, Colonel. The Security Council has just voted. They've decided to negotiate.
You're joking.
We think we can deal with General Bison. You're instructed to call off the assault, contact him, request an extension of his deadline. We're prepared to pay the ransom demand.
$20 billion? What will prevent him from taking more hostages next month and asking for $50 billion? $100 billion?
Colonel, have you lost your mind?
No. You've lost your balls.
Colonel Guile, deliver these instructions to your troops, and then consider yourself relieved of your command.
Troopers, I just received new orders. Our superiors say the war is canceled. We can all go home. Bison is getting paid off for his crimes, and our friends who have died here will have died for nothing. But we can all go home. Meanwhile, ideals like peace, freedom, and justice, they get packed up. But we can all go home. Well, I'm not going home. I'm gonna get on my boat, and I'm going upriver, and I'm going to kick that son of a bitch bison's ass so hard that the next bison wannabe is gonna feel it. Now, who wants to go home, and who wants to go with me?
The most notable things about the scene are the incredibly sniveling British acting from the AN guy who's there to say, stand down, whatever. Also, the guy who introduces Jean-Claude Van Damme is the then head of Capcom.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Okay.
He gets one scene in the movie, and that's it. But yes, this leads to them defying orders and taking their boats down the old river to Chateauneuf into his complex, which, by the way, they originally wanted this to be helicopters, but they couldn't do it because there was political instability in nearby Myanmar, and they didn't want to give the impression there were military operations happening
there. Okay, then. This scene is definitely the most G.I. Joe scene in the movie, I think.
Yes.
All these high-tech boats and everything.
It's got his name printed on the side of the stealth boat.
His high-tech stealth boat has got his name right on it.
It's got... Well,
if you lose the boat, they'll know where to return it.
High-tech, undetectable stealth boat literally has his name printed on the side. Also, he supposedly volunteers to be the one to go on this thing. Do we ever know what his personal vendetta is against Bison? Is it Charlie?
No. I mean,
it becomes Charlie.
That doesn't hurt, but he just really seems like some kind of guy who loves to kick ass and take down the bad guys.
But there's that line where he talks to Chun-Li. He's like, this isn't about your personal vendetta. And then she walks off and turns around and goes, it's about mine. You know, it's like, it's just nonsensical.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again, I don't think Guile has a personality in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, Jean-Claude Van Damme is just kind of hanging out there being Jean-Claude Van Damme and, like, doing his bad impression of an American GI type dude, but it's not the character. There is no character here.
This portrait of Bison on a horse that they cut to from that scene is incredible, though.
Okay, the really incredible one, though, you see the painting he has of him as a clown?
Yes. Yes, like the three-tone one or whatever. Yes.
So that is a literal riff on a John Wayne Gacy self-portrait.
Oh, yikes. Man, that's dark.
Yikes.
Whoever the production designer was on this movie went super fucking dark for this set
dude,
dressing.
I mean, that walking around the scale, the little model of the future city you intend to build is straight up Hitler shit.
Yes. Bisonopolis. Like, bigger food court.
Yeah, they didn't.
And yeah, all the art stuff is just like riffs on existing like dictators, madmen, people who did, you know, like artist renderings of them, and then just a John Jesus. Wayne Gacy self-portrait in there for some reason.
Man.
It's almost enough to distract me from actually how much fun this scene between Chun-Li and Bison is, where they are playing off one another, and he gives his infamous speech about it was Tuesday.
It was 20 years ago. You hadn't promoted yourself to general yet. You were just a petty drug lord. You and your gang of murderers gathered your small ounce of courage to raid across the border for food, weapons, slave labor. My father was the village magistrate. A simple man with a simple code, justice. He gathered the few people that he could to stand against you. You and your bullies were driven back by farmers with pitchforks. My father saved his village at the cost of his own life. You had him shot as you ran away. A hero at 1,000 paces.
I'm sorry. I don't remember any of it.
You don't remember?
For you, the day Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
Like, is this where that came from?
Yes.
Is this the origin of that line? Okay.
It is.
Okay. It was almost worth watching the rest of this movie just to hear him say that without knowing he was going to say that.
It's actually a legitimately pretty good line, and it's like this interplay between the two of them, I feel like, is the most successful scene in the movie.
It is like straight up cold blooded shit.
It's withering for her.
She just spent 5 minutes explaining how you ruined her life by killing her father. The day that Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. For me, it was Tuesday. Just like
he does a good job with it, and it is withering. It like really is like, damn, that is.
It's become such a cliche though that I had no idea I was going to hear it in its initial form here. It was pretty good.
Well, and the thing that really makes it kind of devastating is that like she says at the outset, like when he came and raided her village, he was just part of some gang of, you know, like rebels. Like he was not the fucking, you know, the leader of this massive army or whatever he is now. He was just some guy that did raids and just killed people indiscriminately. Like, he wasn't a big deal, but he's talking about it like this is all part of his grandiose plan and vision. Like, you know, me showing up at your thing was part of my predestined thing. And it's just like, no, dude, you're a shitty warlord who just kind of, you know, managed to rise to the ranks by just being ruthless and taking over this small country. Like, you're just a fucking psychopathic murderer. That's it.
Yeah.
And again, that scratches at something that the rest of the movie never manages to really pay off on.
Yeah. At least she gets to kick his ass for a few minutes here.
Yes.
Which I did not expect to see him actually getting brutalized by anybody until the end of the movie.
She does the kick. She does the Chun-Li flying kick.
Yeah, I was going to say that this will be the one. Well, there's a couple instances of half-assed versions of special moves toward the end, but like there are a few jump kicks in this that are probably the closest thing to like fighting game moves that I can think of.
There are
a few,
but they don't look great.
Not amazing, but they do at least kind of attempt to have people do like flying kicks like, here and there.
And this is
a pretty serious one.
They're pretty good. Like when they do the move, you can see the move like from the game. Like they do it and it's bad enough.
Yeah, I mean the Ryu fireball and the Guile flash kick are pretty obvious later, but
you got Honda's 100 hand slap. You got his sumo splash. Cammy does
not
the throw,
like kind of the leg move, the leg throw sort of thing.
And she does the thing where she says the name of the move as she's doing it.
Cammy spike.
Yeah, you got like, and it's like okay,
yeah, right. But like. It's there, it's fan service, but I don't think any of it is as satisfying as a Street Fighter fan would want it to be.
No, but it was somewhat enjoyable to watch her beat him up because he sucks so much until he gets out.
Also, he's got this, like, you know, again, I think this character's fun. I don't know how much M. Bison is in here, but the character is fun. He's got this thing where he thinks he is the world's greatest warrior. He's like he's got this thing where he's like, come, face me on the field of battle, and just snaps people's necks and throws them into a pit. So it's good to see him just get kind of bodied here.
Yeah, but I think the thing, it's tough because they clearly are trying to avoid the supernatural aspects of Street Fighter, where like people are literally throwing fireballs and doing, you know, fairly non-realistic things in the course of their fights. Like Bison does not have psycho power here. Like he's not a guy who is like a preternatural warrior or someone who has harnessed this incredible energy that makes him unstoppable. He's just a dictator. He's just a guy who kills people.
Yeah.
And they kind of touch on it a little bit at the end when he gets the electromagnetism thing, but they can't even commit to it then.
No, yeah, there's no reason for him to fly.
His only power is that he's good at kidnapping scientists and forcing them to make cool technology for him.
And also rocking that outfit. That's a hard outfit to rock, good. And he does. Yeah.
Fair. I feel like kind of a lot of nothing happens for like 20 minutes from here.
Well, this is like where we see Dalsim start to feed like the Hallmark Channel into Blanca's, video feed.
Yes.
So maybe make him less of a monster, but also they're still pumping high C into him.
Yes. Yes.
There's the bit where they gas the other heroes, and then they like there's the torture scene with Balrog and E-Honda, right. Where E-Honda is just no selling a fucking Singapore cane.
Yeah, that's quite a bit earlier, actually. That's
a little bit before the Chun-Li scene, but
yeah.
But then like there's the, you know, there's them going down the fucking river and shit exploding and the boats.
That's the stuff that drags for me is the whole like big invasion of the temple base.
Are you telling me you did not like Raul Julia on his fighting stick?
Oh, well, that's later. That's
trying to blow up mines to stop Guile's boat.
Okay, actually, yes. That is okay.
Is the first time the fight stick.
That's
appears.
Right. I was thinking that was toward the end of the movie, but yes, I fucking just fell out of my chair the first time I saw that there is just a straight up arcade pant. Like it's the full thing from the machine. It's not just one stick. It's like the whole control surface from.
It literally
Street
looks
Fighter
like
machine.
A Hori stick. Yeah,
it's fucking nuts.
And so here's the thing is that Vinny, you and I have a fun game we play sometimes where we play Spot the Joystick in the movie. Spot the Flight Stick.
Yeah, Spot the Flight Stick.
I think if you're making this movie and you're going to go that route, you might as well just fucking go for it.
Just
right?
Drop
like,
it
just,
in there.
Just put an arcade cabinet fight system like right there that he's controlling his dastardly machinery with.
There's, I think, I want to say there's the countdown noise from Street Fighter 2 when you've lost the match and it's like you know do you know 5, 4, 3, 2.
I don't know if it's the same voice, but I do think it is the same cadence.
Yeah, and then at some point in there too, so they throw in some actual Street Fighter 2 stuff like this.
I mean, Guile says his fight line. I think Bison says his, you know, like you'll never defeat me.
Are you men enough to fight with me?
Anyone who opposes me will be destroyed.
The lines are in there, yeah. And the bits are in there, but they're not particularly well repurposed.
It's hilarious. The controller is so dumb, and he's just mashing the buttons. And he mashes them all, the six of them at the end, to blow up that one.
Mm-hmm. He's playing Street Fighter like I do.
Yep. Well, he's trying to do his super, you know? He forgot exactly what it is, but he knows it's a combination of at least two buttons somewhere on there. And the Guile is like, let's get out of here. And they jumped out of their, it's Cammy, Guile, and T-Hawk, right? In the stealth chip.
Yeah. They're the trio.
Yeah. And then they're on foot invading the castle. It really doesn't matter. I feel like we're just filling time now at this point. Like these action scenes are bad.
We're doing the legwork to get the matchups you need for your actual end fights, but none of what is setting that up is interesting.
Guile tries to sneak in, and then there's another non-sequitur cut where he's like slipping down, like I don't know how he falls or something, but is slipping down some shaft and then descends with a rope.
And then falls into the secret lab.
Yeah,
like
right.
He's fucking Mr. Magooing his way through this place.
Totally.
Like, it's so weird. Like
but he gets in there.
Straight up, they just have to throw in the "oh god, there's a big spider crawling across me" parts
for no reason.
Most cliched shit.
But he is now in the base, which is the important part. And Cammy and T-Hawk are outside doing whatever they need to do out there.
Yeah, they beat up some guards to take their outfits, but it doesn't really go anywhere. I want to give a special mention though to this movie. There's one thing, like the '90s are about a lot of things, but one of the things the '90s was extremely about was illy colored camouflage. Camouflage that will not camouflage you from anything unless you are a no-limit soldier. And so this movie has some of the most illy colored camouflage I've ever seen in my fucking life. Yeah. What are they camouflaging? Nothing. But it looks cool.
They're wearing blue camo in the jungle.
Yep.
And red camo.
It's hey, listen, the red at least would work for me in the jungle, being colorblind, like red, green, colorblind. But that blue, I could see that standing out. It's walking this line between that Mario movie and the things that come. We had to be here to get there, but we do have everybody we need now inside Bison's Fortress of Solitude, whatever he's got going on here.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say we can't get there from here. But
he finds out right around when they're breaking in that Blanca has been sprung.
Oh yeah,
because he's all about his like program to create a legion of super soldiers to take over the world, and this is the first one, and he's gonna use him to kill all the hostages. Except he's not there in the pod.
Is this where he does his shitty Sagat? Maybe you didn't see him. Thing,
yes.
And like, what
yes.
like he's an asshole dictator on a lot of levels, but this was the point I was like, dude, you're just an asshole.
You're really just kind of jigging it in there, aren't you?
Yes. Like Guile ends up in the lab with Blanca and starts to just shoot him.
Oh, right. He's going to execute his friend.
Like Blanca still has enough humanity left to go, like, help me. And he says, I'll help you. I'll help you. And he fucking puts a gun to his head until Dalton stops him from shooting his friend.
And so there's a bit where in the struggle before the unleashing of Blanca and all that stuff happens, where Dalton is struggling with one of the guards. You don't really see it. It's hard to tell, but apparently he gets the super soldier goop
he
on
does.
Him.
He does.
Which is why he starts to morph.
Yeah, I did see that because I was so waiting for like video game Dalton to appear.
Yes. When does yoga fire happen?
Right.
Please.
I was like, okay, he's going to start doing the stretchy limb thing now, right? Because he just got that mutagen stuff all over him, right?
He's going to teleport Blanca out.
Nope.
Nope.
No, all he gets is the bald head and the origin story of the rings around his wrist, and that is fucking it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Listen, he was chained up. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, there is a long ending action sequence to come here, but I feel like there's not a whole lot left with those characters. Like for how much they build up Blanca in particular as being like this genetic super soldier killing machine, like they just sort of vanish from the movie in the chaos.
I mean, so much so that when they bring up the tube that's supposed to have Blanca in it, who should jump out but springing Guile in his full-on jump kick mode.
Yeah, there's another one of those jump kicks, yeah.
Chun-Li's
very happy.
Blanca
has, like, no role in this movie other than just kind of being
nice.
There.
Crazy how much...
Pun intended. Mm-hmm. Yes, nice.
Crazy how much they just give him nothing to do at the end of this.
I mean, he looks awful, so I'm not surprised they wanted to disguise that, but the makeup is so bad.
It's terrible.
It's bad. He doesn't get any electricity. He doesn't, you know, shock anybody.
The constant cuts to that computer terminal going like muscle mass increased by 71%.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dude that comes out look exactly like the dude who went in, except green.
He's like, they maybe painted some abs on him.
Right.
I don't know. But
like, maybe like sub in a bodybuilder for the Blanca that comes out. Maybe. I don't know.
It's bad.
It's bad.
Yes.
But this does, we now have our matchups here as this kind of works its way through. There's some stuff with Ken, like, oh, is he going to leave Ryu behind to take his treasure or whatever? But it's like kind of pointless.
That whole thing with Ken of like, let's get out of here. I'm going to try to find something that makes it worth this or worth it or whatever. And then Ryu's like, I already found something that's worth it, or I found something to believe. It's like, where did this character development come from? Like, what is it that you have found to believe in here?
But also, what are their characters?
Yeah.
No.
What is their motivation for anything?
DJ just wants to get paid.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yes, DJ shouldn't have left Microsoft, apparently.
His character at least is you know, somewhat one note, but at least is clear what he's doing and is after.
I do wish they'd let him do a little more comic relief than what he's allowed to do here. Like, he has some good reaction bits to Bison's bullshit that I feel like is the audience surrogate to a certain degree. But they really put him on the back, you know, part of the scene in just about everything he's in. He really doesn't get much chance to do anything other than kind of call Zangief an idiot every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yes, they were the bad guys.
So here's our matchups. Yeah. Here's what we have. Our final, like, our actual... quote unquote street fights. E Honda versus Zangief.
15-20 minutes from the end of the movie, we finally get some fighting.
Yes. I will say E Honda versus Zangief, not a great fight, but fun.
Okay.
Those two actors, beef, like big meaty men slapping meat.
Yeah.
That's fun.
What is this bit from their fight where some characters see them fighting in the middle of that model city?
Mm-hmm.
And you're straight up getting like Godzilla sounds in the middle of it.
I feel like the Japanese audience probably thought that was very respectful and worthwhile to have in the film.
Just bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
We have Sagat and Vega versus Ryu and Ken. At least we get some Vega street fighting, finally.
In a locker room? Like this weirdly claustrophobic setting for that fight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't really go anywhere. I think Vega and Ryu have some good bits, though. I mean, look, Wes Studi, great character actor. Not a street fighter, does not really have the gravity of what the video game version of Sagat does, so you don't feel like he's that threatening, mostly.
Yeah, I mean, he does make reference to being a retired street fighter earlier in the movie.
Yeah, he's supposed to be older at this point, but...
This is where Ryu gets, he does his what they're trying to do a Hadouken, but it's just like a flash of light that happens.
Yeah.
But I get it. You're trying to do it. I think you also get the kick in there too. Yeah. But you don't get any uppercuts. Nobody scars Sagat's chest.
No, it's all pretty limp. I like a surprising number of characters kind of just get sidelined here. Like Chun-Li doesn't really do very much in this conclusion.
Yep.
I mean, Cammy isn't really much of a character, but at least Kylie Minogue has some presence. T-Hawk doesn't get to do shit in this movie at all, ever.
He gets asked about his headband, that's it.
Yeah. And then you have your Guile versus Bison square off.
Oh, you forgot about Balrog is just punching soldiers in the head with his boxing glove.
Yeah. Yes.
It's also kind of a bummer.
It's just in the helmet.
My girlfriend was just like, where the hell did this boxing gloves come from?
He brings them with him, in case.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's the thing. Honda before the Zangief fight are fighting some soldiers, but that's it. Balrog just kind of disappears after that.
Yeah, him and Chun-Li both get like one quick scene of hitting some of these red suited commando guys.
And I'll say, look, this is where you get to see Van Damme do some of his Van Damme shit. He is doing some very athletic looking kicks.
They sure do let him just do like roundhouse after roundhouse in this fight.
Yes, no sonic booms, but at least he does some flippy looking kicks.
Yeah.
They find a way to make what is clearly an ailing Raul Julia at least look like he's keeping pace with him in a way that doesn't look embarrassing. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
But it's not a great fight. None of like even after the fake out of him dying and then coming back, I do love the built-in resuscitation system that Bison has for himself. That's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely funny. It's also very, I mean, it's just silly.
It's very silly, but okay, futuristic dictator, sure, I could see him having that. But the second tier of that fight where he's supposed to be in Super Bison mode, having the electromagnetic powers, this is pathetic.
It sucks. Yeah, I was like, wow, we're really going to get a Psycho Crusher here, huh? Oh.
He just flies back and forth like three times.
He's just able to fly around with these glowing shoes, apparently. He also does some Palpatine hand lightning type stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's out of the game. Bison shoots lightning, he's got psycho power,
But he doesn't even do, like, the slidey kick thing at any point. Right. Like, they don't even have him do, like, the regular martial arts moves he has.
And then finally, the way that Guile dispatches him is, like, so anticlimactic. It's just like, okay, on his third Psycho Crusher torpedo move, you just kick him in the face into some TVs and he's dead.
But not even the flash kick. I mean, he does a flash kick before that, I think, but not even, it's not the final, the final kick should be the flash kick.
You had him kick the villain to death and not even do his signature kick.
You still refuse to accept my godhood. Keep your own god. In fact, this might be a good time to pray to him. For I beheld Satan and he fell from heaven like lightning!
Bison, you're on the air.
It's a mess. I feel bad for everyone involved in this because it just feels like they were building to something and none of it paid off at all whatsoever.
Is it after this that Balrog, because he punches a couple of guys, but there's one where he does like the Looney Tunes wind up like.
That's before all this.
Oh, is that before this? Okay. Because that's also like, it's moves like that are the kind of Godzilla movie thing that just feel.
Look, was the first human in the world to personify Balrog. He had not worked out all the kinks yet. He's a trailblazer of Balrog portrayals.
It's true. But one of my notes here is just fucking Raul, because when he talks, it's just fun.
Yes, I love Raul Julia. I love listening to him.
He's going
like,
for it.
His expressions, he's just like, he is 110% in whatever is happening here. And it's a shame once he's off screen, because I feel like the movie is lesser for it now that we just have to deal with Guile talking.
Listen, this man starred in one of the greatest mystery science theater movies of all time in Overdrawn at the Memory Bank. This man does not know how to portray his internal embarrassment about whatever films he is in. He gives it to whatever project he is working on.
It's great.
He's very good at it. Oh, wait, Sagat does have the chest scar.
He has it at the end. I don't know if he got it during that fight or if he already had it, but it's, yeah, see, you only see it at the very, very end.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wanted him to get it. I wanted some story there.
And then, we're here, right? Like the final scene.
Yeah, this is the end.
Like they all come filing out of the temple.
Yeah.
Zangief has had his face turn.
Right. Yep. And you've just got the entire assembled roster of Street Fighter II basically hanging out here together almost.
Well, Dalsim and Blanca
A few, but like every bit of dialogue in this last scene is just like so excruciating. Like none of it. It all feels so goddamn awkward.
He was a brave man. A true warrior.
He told us to leave. We did the right thing.
Well, it still feels pretty wrong to me.
Kyle! Colonel!
Lieutenant, make a note. I need a vacation.
Yes, sir. Take us, sir. On the way out.
I guess you've earned your passports back.
You can hang on to them.
Somebody's gonna have to help put this country back together. Maybe a couple of hustlers can help.
Ever think of enlisting?
No.
Yeah. Lieutenant Guile. How about that interview for my network?
Sure. But only if you wear that dress.
Yeah, it's really fucking bad.
Oh my god, like Van Damme is like the worst too.
When he comes in after everyone's all sad because they think he died, it's just like no one seems even really that excited that he's back. It's more of like a, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Like,
most of these characters have barely interacted with each other in this movie. Like, you know, everybody's all
like,
been
who are our world warriors here? We have Zangief, we have Ryu, we have, I'm looking at the shot, we have Ken, Chun-Li, Honda, Balrog, Captain Sawada, T-Hawk, Cammy, and Guile. Those are our world warriors at the very end here in our freeze frame.
For your end game, you just beat the game freeze frame.
Yeah. Oh my god, that freeze frame.
They're going for it.
Oh, I couldn't.
Bless their hearts for trying.
So bad.
Bless their hearts in that very southern, you know, withering kind of way.
They turn around because the building explodes. Is that it? Nobody's worried about Blanca or Dalsim. They just do their. I don't even think Guile has a comb, right?
He just puts his
arms up.
Oh, it didn't occur to me. Are they like straight up doing their like doing wind poses from?
Yeah,
the
they're
game?
Doing their yes. mystery poses.
Oh my god,
yes.
I didn't even realize that's what they're doing. Golly shit!
Yes.
Look at Ken. He's got his fist pumped in the air.
Yeah, it's the Chun-Li jump in particular is the one that's like, oh right, okay, that's like straight out of the game.
Yes, they're all doing their except for what's the guy's name? The new guy,
Sawada.
He just puts his hand. I don't know if that's in the Street Fighter the game, the movie. I assume.
Or is that a Fei Long pose? I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, look, Fei Long died on his way back to his home planet, so.
At least they gave Cammy pants. You know, like I said, there are some places where this movie could have gone left instead of right, and at least they made some good choices here. I mean, she's got, in the game, are they camo tights? Are they, like, see-through?
Is she wearing camo leg paint?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell.
I always took that as leg paint.
It's like camo leg paint? Or
yeah, like
it,
she had put like camo paint on her body.
Or tights.
Or like flesh-colored.
Usually thought.
It's definitely, what I remember, it's butt. It's cami.
There's a lot of cami ass in original cami design, yes.
Some cami butt. But yes, Guile is doing his, like, I'm combing my hair, but he definitely has no comb, nor does he have the hair.
Nor does he have the hair to really demonstrate what's happening there.
Yep.
It's, And then we have our post-credit scene, which was left out of the theatrical cut because it is literally Raul Julia coming back from the dead, and apparently they thought that would not play well 2 months after his death because he died 6 weeks after the film finished filming.
Sure.
Good on him.
Yes, but then they put it on every home video release.
Yeah.
There's nothing to it.
It's kind of worthless, yes.
Like, you only see it like it's just a hand, right?
Yeah, implying that Bison would return in the proposed sequel. Though again, everyone involved knew that Raul Julia would probably not be coming back given his health. So the whole thing is a little bit baffling.
Wait, there were designs on a sequel?
I mean, I think that's what that's... I mean, I don't know that they had ever gotten past like the, hey, we should maybe do a sequel to this if it makes money discussion stage. But, you know, you don't put a scene in that like that in there unless you're like alluding to the idea that maybe we'll make another one of these.
Oh, man.
No. It is a bit ironic. Again, we'll talk about this more when we do Mortal Kombat next week, but both the Super Mario Brothers and the Street Fighter movies had scenes, post-credit scenes, that kind of alluded to, oh, we're going to do more of these, and then they didn't. And then Mortal Kombat didn't do that, and then they did do more of these, though they definitely shouldn't have.
Yeah, boy.
Street Fighter, folks, it's a movie.
Now I know. Much like the Super Mario Brothers movie, now I can say that I know.
The day that you watched Street Fighter the movie was the most important day of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But for these listeners, it's Monday.
Again, if nothing but a vehicle for some really fun Raul Julia, it's a success. Financially, apparently, was a success.
Almost made $100 million.
Yep. On a, would you say a budget of $30
million? Like 30, 35, I think.
Okay. Yeah, like people got paid for this movie.
Yes.
They could have made a sequel. I don't think nobody wanted to, but
no.
Was that a lot of international money? Do you know? Was that
probably at least a decent chunk? They were really angling for the Japanese audience, obviously, given Capcom's origins and the game's origins. But okay. Yeah.
It's a bad movie.
It's pretty bad,
but it's not entertaining.
That's the thing. I can laugh at this movie. Yeah. There's like, this is a riff track style bad movie where it's like the cheese factor is so over the top that like you can just kind of sink your teeth into that at least.
Yes.
But it is a failure, like in just about every way.
It's also kind of painful at parts with watching Van Damme seemingly struggle with some of these line deliveries. Like,
it's kind of rough.
It's like a little rough.
It's a little rough.
I think, oh boy, I was going to say, is this the worst movie that for
me? Are you saying this is worse than Captain America? Because I'm going to say that's not correct.
It's
close. It's
I'm
going to
put it maybe a little above. I'm going to put it a little above Captain America, but it's Raul Julia saved it from being below Captain America.
Okay.
I could get behind that.
That is about it, but I really like his performance in here, but I really like him, but that's about where it kind of ends for me in terms of what I said before, them trying to throw in the Street Fighter 2 moves and nods and all of these things mixed into this ridiculous bag of somebody that is wasted trying to remember things from Street Fighter 2, like, there's this guy that boxes. His name is Balrog. There's this other guy. I think he's like a sumo wrestler, and he's in it, and he does this thing with his hands a lot. It's like somebody, if I got wasted and tried to explain Street Fighter to somebody.
There's a Russian guy who does pile drivers. I don't know.
He might be bad. He's Russian, so I don't know. Put him in the bad. I'd hit him in a bad guy. DJ does like some kind of dancing fighting. He's in there. You don't have to worry about
that. He does Jamaican dance fighting. That's a thing, right? That's a real fight style.
You don't have to worry. Just don't worry about that. He's put him in there. It's just bizarre.
It is. But, you know, again, I think it's, especially compared with a lot of the video game adaptations that came after this, there is a goof factor here that I feel like some of these other adaptations that came afterward kind of lose. And I'm not saying that makes this worthwhile in any way or a good movie, but I'm glad that I can at least enjoy myself laughing at this fucking thing instead of just being bored to tears by it.
whose career is the descent?
End?
Not end. I want to say
derail.
Van Damme didn't really go on to too much else of note.
His mid to late 90s were not his ideal period. This is kind of like the downswing for him kind of began around this time. Though again, this movie made money, but a lot of the things he did after this kind of did not as much.
And I just don't think he was ever going to be that absolute top tier caliber of action star.
But again,
regardless of this movie, there is
a dimension to him as an actor that I think sometimes gets undersung. You just don't see it in a lot of these movies. But if you've never seen JCVD and you want to kind of see him stretch his legs a little bit more as an actor, that's a great one. It's like he's playing a fake version of himself in that movie. And it's like there's some good layers to that where I feel like he's actually getting at some stuff that he never gets to do as an actor, primarily in his action stuff.
That's fair. I mean, Ming-Na Wen did just fine for herself.
That's true. Yeah, she's pretty good in this also. D'Souza did not direct a movie after this, yes?
I think he did. I don't know that he directed a great very many of them is the thing. But I think he did do some directing after this. I'm just looking this up to make sure.
Movie directing?
You know, maybe he actually did.
Maybe he was like, I'll stick to the typewriter for a bit.
He definitely did some TV directing at some point, but I think maybe that was actually the last movie he directed himself.
But he was mostly a writer.
Mostly a screenwriter, yes, and a script doctor, yeah. He also wrote, this wasn't his last video game movie. He also wrote Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life, the second one.
Okay. I'm trying to think if I saw that one. I feel like I've seen all of them. Those movies weren't terrible.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
But not this kind of terrible.
No, like way more boring terrible.
Just like generic terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I barely remember the second one. The first one I hated.
The first one?
Hated.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't remember hating it that much, but you know, it's
I hated it.
I could see it.
Yeah, it's really fucking bad. But that's Street Fighter.
That's Street Fighter.
We now know. Brad, how do you feel having known this now?
I'm looking forward to watching Mortal Kombat again.
That's the thing. Now we can pivot to something that I know you're actually excited for. A movie you have seen before. We've all seen this one. The 1995 adaptation of Mortal Kombat, still, I think, considered one of the best video game adaptations, and I'm going to say right now, justifiably.
Yeah.
It's a cheesy movie, but the thing is, it knows exactly what it is.
Yeah. That's it.
And it has a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I think Street Fighter and Mario are the two of the most notoriously quote-unquote bad video game
and
movies.
Weird yeah
I think we're out of that. We hit the two big ones, maybe barring any of what's his face's movies.
Uwe Boll doesn't count. He's a whole other subgenre unto himself.
But barring that, I think we're out of that territory. We're now either in, like you were just expressing with Mary Lara Croft, mediocre to fun movies. But nothing goes quite as hard as these two.
And this is an early film from a director who we will be visiting again at the end of the month, Paul W.S. Anderson, husband to Mila Jovovich, action director and of wildly varying degrees of quality, depending on the movie. Like, let's say, I love Event Horizon. I think that's a great movie. It's dumb as shit, but it's really good. He also made Soldier, one of the worst fucking movies I've ever seen in my life. He made like six Resident Evil movies, two of which are kind of good. You know, like, it's that guy's career has been all over the damn place, but he makes money is the wild thing. And Mortal Kombat somehow is one of his more successful things.
Fair.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to rapping with you guys about this one. It's a movie I still have affection for. So that is next week's film. Get ready for that. Thank you, Brad. And thank you, Vinny, as always.
Thank you. It was a fun time.
And thank you to everyone at home for listening and watching along with us. We'll see you next time. Dragon sagging, life is cheap. I bow when I greet. So let's take it to the streets. Ah!
Game not over.